I'm Amy Hall, and you're listening to Stand to Reason's hashtag STRask podcast with Greg Kokel. So,
Amy, you, people can't see your face, but you, Amy's like, I'm trying to figure out what your expression means. Yep, and here we go. We got a, we're going for a ride here.
Got to think about new ways to say it, and after a while, it's like, how many more ways can you say? I'm Amy Hill, and this is Greg Kokel.
Okay,
welcome to the show.
10 seconds in, we're rocking and rolling. That's great. Let's get into it.
All right, let's take a question from Harmony.
All right.
I recently saw a meme that used Jesus to mock hypocrisy and imply Jesus supports socialism. And this is what the meme says. And then Jesus said, I can't heal you for free. That's socialism. So she has two questions regarding this meme. How can I engage with a belief system that uses Jesus to promote liberal politics without delving too deep? And then the second one is, given that we now have a say in our government, is it too far a stretch to apply Jesus's individual admonition to love others to government regulations?
Let me deal with the second one first, because that's maybe easier. Governments can't love people. Only people can love people. Governments can't love people. Now, you can, if you have smaller communities that are committed to an ethic corporately, and they are doing it, you could say that's a very loving community, like Christians are committed to a particular ethic, all right? But governments are exercises of power to force people to do things they don't want to do. And so when the government, say, is taking tax money from people and giving it as they see fit to help others, that isn't an act of love by the government who is taking, and some might think, extorting the money from others. And it is not an act of love by those who are having the money taken from them. When they give freely through charity, that's an act of love. And this is part of the problem with the government taking over some of these things that private organizations, particularly Christian ones, used to do, is that now there is no sense of satisfaction of giving to any. People listening here give money to organizations, let's just say Salvation Army or something like World Vision. But, you know, there is a deep sense of satisfaction that people have when they give, all right, in a thing like that. They don't have that satisfaction when they look at the money taken out of their check every week saying, oh, that's okay, I'm helping hungry kids. No, they're angry. So I don't think the government has overstepped its bounds here. And what some people have think is that it is a loving thing for them to do, to vote for politicians who will take other people's money and use it the way they want to. All right. So if those people want their money to go to a charitable cause, they can give it. Okay. All I'm making, I'm not trying to make a big, giant, broad policy statement here. I'm just simply saying governments aren't loving. Okay. People are loving. Okay. And if the process of taxation against somebody's will and giving things for things that people don't believe in, this is not an act of love. It's an extortion. Okay. I just want to put that in its right perspective. By the way, some of those things that the government gives money to may be good, but you can't call them loving. You know, in the same way. So but this is the way a lot of people will put it. All right. The exception is when the entire community, the vast majority of the community is in favor of such a thing. Okay. Secondly, regarding dealing with Jesus being leveraged to support certain public views, particularly leftist, progressivist political causes. Of course, we see this a lot. And I noticed the tendency of people trying to get Jesus on their side, which indicates that they respect Jesus. They think he's someone to contend with, and so they want to get him on their side. This is kind of at the heart of the What a Friend We Have in Jesus tactic in the new edition of the Tactics book. We want to employ Jesus on our side, just like they're trying, but we don't want to do so illicitly. And this, I think, is what's happening here. I decided, because I got really bugged by an article I read once, and to look through the Gospels and just kind of speed through the Gospels and find everything Jesus said about helping the poor, because he's so hijacked, I think, to this enterprise. You know, Jesus really was all about the poor. He's all about the marginalized. And of course, then those using this for political purposes then put their favored groups in the marginalized, right? All right. And groups that Jesus would never be championing, given his biblical ethic. But nevertheless, this is what's done. I started in the Gospel of John. I got entirely through the Gospel of John, and I did not find a single verse in the Gospel of John that could be construed as Jesus promoting helping the poor or fulfilling some kind of social justice mandate. It's not there. Not a single verse. Read through it yourself. You can find it. Now, the significance here is it shows that just one gospel, there are three others, but it shows that this was not the reason Jesus came. Because the Gospel of John is probably, it's the end of the first century that John wrote it. It's the last gospel to be written. It's the most sublime characterization of the person and the work of Christ, and doesn't mention anything like that, which doesn't mean that Jesus didn't care about those things. It means it wasn't why he came. Obviously, there was some other reason, all right? And then when you look at the major discourses of Jesus, the Bread of Life discourse, John 6, not a mention. The Upper Room discourse, not a mention. That's one-third of the Gospel of John, by the way. The Olivet discourse, not a single mention. The only other discourse he gave was the Sermon on the Mount. And there he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. And in one other iteration, it doesn't say poor in spirit, but the point is that since he is, the people who are poor are the ones who are poor in spirit, that is, they have spiritual poverty, they're more responsive to coming to him. It turns out most of the time he talks about the poor, he is using them as an illustration for something else. Here's the woman who gave the widow's mite. She gave everything she had. Well, that wasn't about helping the poor. That was about how much this woman gave compared to others. And when you give your alms, don't parade it in front of everybody else, you know. Well, that's about pride. That's not about giving alms. Giving alms or charity was presumed as part of the culture. There's no question there. But notice Jesus wasn't championing that as if this was the view. And did Jesus care about the outcast? Yeah. But Nicodemus wasn't an outcast person. Joseph of Arimathea, these were leaders in the Jewish community, but they were repentant. The outcasts were more repentant, characteristically, and he was willing to reach out to them, all right, where the others weren't willing to because they were dirty, filthy sinners. And he said, these are the people I came for, all the dirty, filthy sinners, including you, Pharisees and scribes and lawyers. Okay. So when one reads through the text that way and isolates all the passages where Jesus talks about these, it turns out there's precious little that he said about the topic per se. Now, the Old Testament has things about it, but a lot of what the Old Testament says is about abusing the poor because they're poor. The problem isn't that they're poor. The problem is the injustice and abuse that they receive. And if you go through the text, you read that this is the case. Currently, the point of view is if a person is poor, it's because of an injustice. It is unjust for someone to be poor and someone else to be rich. That's Marxist. From each according to his ability, the rich pay their fair share, to each according to their need. That's Marx. But that is the mentality nowadays, okay? And then people put that on Jesus, all right? So what? Here's my recommendation then for when people try to, I think, hijack Jesus for these purposes. Okay, there's no question, by the way, that we ought to love our neighbor. That's a second great commandment. What's interesting is people who use the second great commandment to hijack Jesus for their political purposes have no interest at all in the first great commandment. None, period. And so they're abusing the teaching of Jesus. Even the Good Samaritan, by the way, which unfortunately is isolated as a discrete teaching, and it's isolated by the title, The Good Samaritan. You know, there it is in your Bible. Read above it. Why did Jesus tell this parable? It is not a morality play. It is an immorality play. Because Jesus just had given both of the great commandments, including love your neighbor, and the person who asked him about it says, well, wait a minute, who's my neighbor? He must have figured out I got the love of God squared away. Okay, I am justified by that part of the law. But, the text says, seeking to justify himself, he asked, who is my neighbor? And that's when Jesus talked about the Good Samaritan. And basically the answer is, your neighbor is your worst enemy. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. And what Jesus was doing with the Good Samaritan is not trying to promote a morality play, but to demonstrate that self-justification is impossible based on the two greatest commandments, which summarize the law. So here's what I would do when people try to use Jesus in this way, because they are socialized to think that Jesus was a social crusader, and he always this, and he always that, and he always the other thing. This is a variation of just the facts, ma'am, tactic. And that is, where did Jesus talk about the specific thing that you're discussing? What is it that Jesus said? What you want to do is require of the person, tell me what Jesus said. Go back to the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor in spirit. All right? Well, it's spiritual poverty. You know, I came to preach the gospel to the poor. Well, he preached the gospel to everybody, not just the poor. In that episode with John the Baptist. And so the poor, I think, there is to be understood in terms of the poor in spirit, all those people who realize their need. I came to seek and to save that which was lost, you know, to forgive their sins. I mean, Jesus said these time and time. Then when he states his mission, he refers to his ability to rescue people from themselves, not to rescue the poor from the rich. This is why you have to go back and say, tell me where Jesus spoke about these things. And if they go back to the Good Samaritan, that's where you say, well, let's look at the context and see why he told that parable. All right. What the man did to the Samaritan did with the Jewish, injured Jewish man was a very good thing. It was an example of loving his neighbor. But that was not the point Jesus was making, principally. Anyway, that's what you have to do. Just the facts. What exactly are the facts of Jesus' teaching regarding these things? And make them quote chapter and verse, because I think this common refrain, Jesus was all about the poor and the disenfranchised and all that other stuff, does not comport with the record. When you read the record, you don't find that.
One thing to keep in mind here is, what a great opportunity. If they're using Jesus, well, now you've got a great end to talk about Jesus. They've opened the door wide for you. And this is a great opportunity. I would look forward to this opportunity. And one thing I just want to reiterate here, and you touched on this briefly, Greg, but the Old Testament law is all about what it means to love your neighbor. So it's not that God is against this. But this is the reason why Jesus didn't have to address it. That was the law. The law, and Paul equates the law with loving your neighbor later on. That's what God was creating by having these laws that would teach them how to love their neighbors well. So the fact that Jesus didn't talk about that is because it was already established and the law was already established. But he came with the gospel. He came with grace. And that's why his message was different. And so if you can explain to them, well, there's a difference between law and grace. Jesus came to give us grace and forgiveness. That's what makes his news good. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he would just be saying the same news they'd been saying all along, which is, here's how to be good, rather than having the good news of Jesus saying, here, I'm here to give you my righteousness mm-hmm. and to forgive you your sins. Mm-hmm. So keeping those two categories in mind might be a good way to go about this. And I just have a few. I've been writing all these notes while you've been talking, Greg. I have a few things to say about the second question here about how, given that we now have a say in our government, is it too far a stretch to apply Jesus' individual admonition to love others to government regulations? Well, there are so many. The thing that makes it difficult to communicate with people from the two different sides is that they define everything in that sentence in different ways. So is it too far a stretch to say that we love people by making good laws? No, of course not. We vote for good laws because we want the good of the people around us. It's because we care about people. That is the very reason why we are fighting for the laws that we fight for. We think certain laws and certain systems of government will do a better job than others at treating people with dignity, treating people justly. The problem is now both those things, human dignity and justice, are defined differently by the different mm-hmm. sides, and that makes it really hard to come together.
I think the phrase you're looking for, if I could jump in here, is just human flourishing. But human flourishing has a particular end in mind, and people now view human flourishing as narcissism, and God views human flourishing as the end for which he made human beings, which he gives guidelines on how to accomplish those ends.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's okay. So what this comes down to is a difference in belief as to the role of government. So what is the proper role of government? Is, you know, just to go back to what this says here, I can't heal you for free, that's socialism. Well, that's not socialism. Socialism is central control of the economy by the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what Jesus was doing was mercy and charity. And that's something we all do. It's not necessarily the job of the government to give mercy and charity. I think it's more the job of the government to create a situation where people are treated justly. And by justly, I don't mean everybody has the same thing.
Right.
I mean that the laws apply equally to everybody and that nobody is punished because they are poor or because they're rich. And the Old Testament is very clear about this. The law is supposed to treat people the same and not preference the poor and not preference the rich. It
by the way,
says
underscore
both those
that.
Things.
Yeah, and Exodus says that directly. Do not favor the poor in judgment. That's in Exodus, and it's very important for this. Go ahead.
So for an entity whose job, the government, is justice, which is rewarding people according to the good and the bad, they're not the proper expression of mercy and charity. The proper that falls to the people who are institutions like the church, like us individually, like other nonprofits, where people are giving of themselves rather than a government controlling all the decisions made in an economy. That's a completely
right.
different thing. And I would also say that's not loving to people because it results in a lot of problems, and it results in more poverty, and it results in people's not being able to make free decisions in the marketplace, mm-hmm. and it results in a lot of money wasted. So I reject the notion that socialism is loving people, and I reject the notion that socialism is even mercy and charity, because I don't think it is. I think it's people taking from others, and I think it's people demanding that money be taken from others and given to others. But even more than that, it's government control of decisions made in the economy. And so there are a bunch of different definitions here that people will have different views about, and they may not understand your view. So when you say you are not for socialism, what they hear is, I don't want to help the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what people are saying. There's no socialism in the Old Testament. Does that mean that they didn't care about the poor? Well, that's obviously not true. You cannot equate the two. They're not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
One book that I really love is Jay Richards' book, Money, Greed, and God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it explains a lot of these things in a way people can understand. So I do recommend that. I'm trying to think if there was something else I wanted to say about this.
Well, while you're thinking about it, my reflection about socialism is people, this is an assessment, this is a judgment on my part, but I think that people who are promoting socialism in many cases are not promoting socialism so that the government gives to the poor. They are promoting socialism so that the government gives to them. And you can see the appeals that are being made politically regarding a lot of these things. We're going to give all this stuff. You know, we're going to cancel all your college debt. Yay! We want you. We want you, politicians, because now we're going to get free education. So even if they're not poor, you know, anyway, I wanted to emphasize, too, when I was talking about the Gospels, it isn't that Jesus did not care about that. I'm not claiming that. I'm claiming Jesus did not focus in on that. It isn't the reason he came, and it wasn't the focus of his work. And Amy's point is really important. That had already been covered. And Jesus just summed it up a couple of times in excruciating terms. You know, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Your neighbor is your worst enemy. Good luck.
And I will say that we are commanded, or one of the commandments, and I believe this transfers over morally, that people were commanded to give to others. They, you know, I was just reading Leviticus, and actually this was, I think, Deuteronomy, but they, one of the laws was that they were required every 3 years to bring a certain amount of money, to give a certain amount of money that would go to the widow and the orphan and the alien. And so the idea that we are commanded to give to others, that is absolutely true. The question is that best done through government? And that's what I reject. And so I think maybe something that could help people understand, if this comes down to it, is just say, well, I don't, you know, it depends on if you believe the government is the best way to love people, that socialism is the most loving form of government. And I reject that. Mm-hmm. And here's why. And I think the most we can hope for right now is that people will just understand why there are people who are against socialism, because it has been so connected with the idea of love and goodness and kindness that people assume if you reject socialism, you reject those things. But that is not the case. And so if we can just help people to understand that, maybe we could get back to a point where we could actually have debates on the merits of socialism rather than on whether or not we're evil because we're against it.
Yeah, just think about the difference in one's feeling about writing a check to World Vision or writing a check to the U.S. government for your taxes. Just pay attention to your feelings there, you know. And it's not just the amounts of money that's in question. It's the kind of thing you're doing. Or even just giving money to a guy in the corner, you know. You stop there at the light and he's looking and he's got a sign. And you give. People do that because it's satisfying to them because they think they're actually helping an individual. It's one to one. Okay, it doesn't have to go through the government, and then a whole bunch of your money gets wasted in the process. Anyway, enough on that, I guess.
And I just want to make one last point, and that's when I say we, I'm not saying all Christians. Greg, you and I would say are not socialists. We're not for socialism. I think there probably are true Christians out there who do think socialism is the best way. I think they're wrong about that, and I think there are Christian reasons why they're wrong about that, and I would make my argument with them. But I would never say that if somebody is promoting socialism, that that means they're not saved. Mm-hmm. That's not part of the gospel. This is about, this is a wisdom issue about how to arrange the government and what the government's for. I think it also has to do with the nature of humanity and whether or not we are basically good or basically sinners. I think a lot of worldview ideas play into why socialism is not the way to go, but people can be mistaken about that and Christians can be mistaken about that. So I don't want to just say we're against it and make that look like this is all Christians who are against it. I wish all Christians were against it because I think it's worse for the poor than a free market. But
this is a great point that Jay Richards makes in his book that you mentioned, the title again.
Money, Greed, and God. I never thought I would say that there's an economics book that's a page turner, but it's a page turner. One last thing. I know we've gone on and on, but economics is so interesting because it is about human nature and human decisions.
Mm-hmm. And that's human freedom as well.
Yeah.
Human freedom.
So what do human beings do and how do we arrange the government in a way that takes into account their sinfulness and points that in a direction that will serve society. And so This is all worldview, human nature stuff, and that's my favorite topic. So I recommend his book. That's what it's about, and hopefully I've gotten you interested in economics.
Econ 101. Thank you, Amy.
All right, Greg. We've gone on long enough now. Sorry, we only got to one question, but thank you, Harmony. Actually, you had two questions, so thank you for your questions there. And thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kogel for Stand to Reason.